welcome to a new episode of I See It But I Don't Believe It. I'm Gemma Bastiani, and I'm really excited to be talking about this topic today because I've wanted to talk about it for so long but needed the exact right guest. So I'm so glad when you chose this. I'm very, very happy to be joined by excellent human but also Melbourne supporter in the AFLW, Lucy Race. Hello.
Hello, Gemma. How are you?
I am great that we get to talk about this. What about you?
Good. This feels really indulgent, actually, that we get to sit and talk about our love of the Melbourne AFLW team and this game in particular.
Yes. So I think a thing we both have in common is Melbourne isn't our AFLM team. So we have a very special attachment to this women's team, don't we?
That's right. So, and I think, you know, that's something that I love about AFLW, that we all come to the game, you know, with different stories and in different ways. And I have to say, my love of that Melbourne team is no way diminished, you know, because of that.
Right. And I think we're both facing it. Soon we're going to have to make a choice. And I don't think I'm going to be able to make a choice.
I know, I just keep putting it off. But I feel like with football, the heart says what the heart knows. And you'll know. Yeah. And I think, you know, my love of the Hawthorn Football Club, which is my club for my whole entire life, and my love of the men's team and the love of that Hawthorn VFLW team, that doesn't mean that I can't have the same kind of love for Melbourne AFLW. So I feel like my heart will just grow bigger.
I appreciate you saying this because I notoriously love, like, have a soft spot for a lot of teams in and some different teams in both leagues. So in AFLW, I really love Fremantle. We all know this. I really love the Suns. And in the men's, I obviously go for the Swans, but I love the Melbourne team and I love now. I am a member of the Suns.
I think that's fair.
I was so close to getting a Gold Coast membership halfway through the AFLW season because I love Kalinda Howarth, I love Kate Sermon, love what they're doing. And then when Matt Rowell started playing, I was like, I need to buy this. So, it was only $55, so that's okay.
It's okay. I have to say my love of Gold Coast has really rocketed this year as well. I think you and I are kindred spirits, and a lot of it is because of the women's team. And Kalinda, I thought, was just a standout. I have a massive soft spot for Tiana Ernst, who I just think is one of the smartest, most hardworking, brilliant footballers, and I adore her. So I've kind of had, you know, that love of the Suns. And then Matt Rowell is just a joy to watch.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's brought a nice light to a lot of people's lives, I think.
I actually watched him play as a junior. So he played with a friend of mine with their son. And so I remember going and watching, you know, this one game, and we were like, who is that kid? Oh, my goodness. And he was amazing because not only was he the best player on the field, but he had the best footy brain because he would look around and, you know, he could have just blazed away every single time he had the ball, but he didn't. He was so intelligent and so generous in the way that he played with his teammates that it just, I was like, oh, this kid's going to go far.
Yeah, Melbourne's men's team could learn a thing or two from that. I'll just leave it at that. There is an opinion piece in the works from me about that after the weekend. Anyway, I forgot to do the intro because I got really excited. For those who don't know who you are, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yes, I am Lucy Race. I am one of the co-hosts of the Outer Sanctum podcast, and I am a footy fan, and that's how I've come to this.
Heck yeah. And I wanted to also get you to tell us, because you've told me this story, but lots of people don't know, I don't think, how you came to follow Melbourne in the AFLW, given you're a Hawthorn supporter.
Well, when we, back in 2017, when the licenses were all being given out, as part of the podcast, I'm one of six, and the dirty little secret about our podcast is that we're all Hawthorn supporters. And the reason, I know, but it's actually a great thing because that's how we found each other. So three of us are sisters, so clearly we knew each other, but we joined forces with the other three because we had a chat group that was all around football, and it was because of our love of Hawthorn. So we didn't go out seeking people and saying, you know, apply for this position in a podcast, but you must barrack for Hawthorn. It was basically the origin story. So when the licenses were handed out in, you know, before the first season, we were all talking about who we were going to go for, and everybody had, you know, fun. Like, some people had little feelings, like Alicia's family go for Collingwood, so she picked the Collingwood women's team, and Emma clearly went for Carlton because her husband's a Carlton supporter. And I just had this feeling about Melbourne, and I think it grew out of my love of the Darebin Falcons, because I'd watched them play in those two previous VFLW seasons. I'd been to the grand final and watched them win. Yeah. And then just through what is that lovely community of women's football, I started to, you know, get to know some of the personalities. Daisy Pierce, I'd always had a soft spot for. A friend of mine is a midwife who had worked with her, so I'd actually known her story for a very long time and had always kind of kept an eye on her. And so that was I definitely had a soft spot for her. And then I was lucky enough to, you know, in our first season of doing the podcast, I think we met Mel Hickey and Elise O'Day, who, you know, is one of my favourite players as well. And so it was just a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah,
and, you know, as a Hawthorn supporter, I've always wanted, you know, some colours to wear that, you know, nicer on the eye than the golden brown. So navy and red really appealed to my aesthetic.
Well, and the redback Guernseys with the royal blue is pretty nice as well.
No, yeah. I like the navy. I like the navy better. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
So, yeah.
Controversial, I think.
Yeah, I know. Not a true demon, maybe.
No, well, yeah, it's really I love the stories about how people found their AFLW team when it's a different team to one they followed in the men's, or if they didn't follow the men's footy before that, how they found their team. So, yeah, I mean, my whole family goes to Melbourne, so that was that for me. But, yeah, let's – can you tell us the moment you've chosen to speak about today?
Yes, I have chosen to speak about the semi-final that Melbourne played against GWS, which actually turned out to be the last round of football for AFLW for season 2020.
Yeah. And specifically Lily Mithen's second ever goal in AFLW.
Yes. The story of two goals.
Two goals. Okay, so we want to start this off by just giving a bit of insight into Melbourne's journey through AFLW over the 4 years, because – as Melbourne supporters, we feel ripped off, shortchanged, I could use many words, for what happened over this time. So in 2016, Melbourne are given an inaugural license for the 2017 season. They were one of the front runners because they did have a number of exhibition matches between them and the Western Bulldogs since 2013. They signed one of the most well-known women's footy players in the country in Daisy Pierce as the marquee, and she was the first player to ever be signed to a list at AFLW level. They built a really strong list off the back of Darebin's strong development, which you've already mentioned, at state level. So Karen Paxman was one of them. Mel Hickey was another. Elise O'Day. There's a lot of inaugural Melbourne players that did come straight out of that Darebin program, which is highly successful. What was it? Six flags in, what, 6 years or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. I always forget the actual numbers.
Yeah, incredible. Like, they were the most – it was like the Port Adelaide Magpies in the Sandfall. Like, that's how dominant Darebin Falcons were over that period. And heading into 2017, they were expected to be one of the strongest teams. Season 2017 started with a game against Brisbane. They lost, so that didn't start great. They were very strong, though, but missed finals on percentage. So they had the same points as Adelaide, but a lower percentage, and at that stage, only the top three made it through to the grand final. So Melbourne missed out on percentage in 2017, which was devastating. Then we go to 2018, which was like deja vu. Strong, strong season, but missed the grand final on percentage. They had the same points as Brisbane, but a lower percentage. So that's 2 years in a row that Melbourne supporters are just sad. Then 2019, we're like, okay, this is our year. And then they introduce conferences.
Oh, yes. And if there was a combined ladder, maybe We would have made it.
Well, yes, though, because with the switch to conferences, the top two of each conference made it through. Melbourne landed into the stronger conference, so the more difficult conference, with heavy hitters Adelaide, Fremantle and North Melbourne. The Western Bulldogs were in there too, but they weren't really as strong as the other four. Mm. They ended up with 4 wins and 3 losses and a percentage of 111.2, which was higher than Conference B's first place Carlton. But because of the conferences, Carlton and Geelong make it through to the finals and Melbourne and North Melbourne get knocked out, even though they were the stronger teams.
Yeah.
So we just are all crying on the floor at this point. Carlton did show a lot in finals. I'll give them that, but, you know, conferences have done.
I know. You can't. And look, you know, I also take heart from North Melbourne's, you know, just the way they were so stoic about missing out on finals as well. You know, they were flying. They were one game ahead, I think, of us.
Yep.
And so while we missed out, you know, on percentage, they'd actually won another game. And so I feel like, you know, it was a little bit tougher on them. But you can only do what you can do. And unfortunately, I think in all of our seasons we dropped games that we shouldn't have dropped.
Oh my God. Typical Melbourne.
Yep.
And accuracy in front of goal was the big thing.
Yeah.
And remember this year when Melbourne kicked 1-8 and we stood next to each other and you were just like, I'm going to go now because Jim is sad.
I know. But I guess, you know, some of those things, I guess, are themes across our four seasons, really.
They are.
You Melbourne, know, even in this game, we can talk about missed opportunities.
Melbourne, I did the stats on it, and Melbourne over the time have been the second least accurate team in the competition, which tells us all we need to know. Do you want to know who the least accurate has been?
No, who?
Of the inaugural teams? The Giants.
Ah, yes, okay.
Also appropriate in this game.
Also appropriate.
So we get to season 2020. We have conferences again, but it's the top three of each that make it through to finals. Melbourne, again, are in the tougher conference with strong teams like Fremantle, Carlton and Collingwood. So it was already going to be tough, but Melbourne were looking like a really strong team heading into it. Their list was probably the best in the competition. And then Lauren Pearce goes down and needs knee surgery in the preseason, which meant she was going to be out for half the season. Lily Mithen cops a syndesmosis injury in the preseason game against Collingwood, which we were at together.
Yes.
Kat Smith and Shay Sloan both go down with ACLs in the preseason. Jackie Parry does her hamstring in the preseason. She was such an exciting prospect. Number 19, everyone watch out for her. Kicked a great goal in that preseason game. Guerin, Kemp and Lampard all do their ACLs during the season. Shelley Heath had to get her appendix out midway through the season. Meg Downey missed second half of the season due to illness. And then Sinead Goldrick and Niamh McAvoy, who were our Irish recruits who are incredible, then at the start of the pandemic, as finals were coming, were sent back to Ireland for their benefit, which you can't complain. No one complains about. So lost two very important players through that. Tegan Cunningham was terribly out of form after a brilliant season the year before. And Sarah Perkins, noted Hawthorn VFLW player, had to be elevated as an injury replacement player because Melbourne was down to their threshold. So backs were against the wall.
Yeah. You can add one other one in there. Remember Bianca Jacobson?
Oh, shit. Left I forgot at the about start. Her.
Yeah. So, but that's a really interesting one because she left at the start of the season because of her work commitments. And I think that's such a pertinent point when you talk about AFLW, that there are so many things that, you know, can be barriers for, you know, women playing at the highest level. And one of those things can be the fact that they, you know, have full-time jobs as well.
Yeah, and Bianca Jacobson is such an important player to the team, and like, all of these players are important players to the team.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
I was like December last year, I was so confident. I was like, this is Melbourne's year. Like they're going to do it this year. Look at this list. Libby Birch into this defensive line, amazing. Daisy Pearce is back. Like look at what they can do. And then slowly they just started dropping like flies and I just lost hope with everything. Well,
you know, especially when you look at, say, Lauren Pearce had won the Lambert Pearce Medal which is for the best and fairest in the VFLW competition.
Yep.
That's massive. And so, you know, you think you've got her Daisy coming back is a massive story. Libby, I don't know that we necessarily knew she was going to play as well as she did. I think, you know, she was a great pickup, but I think she definitely delivered way more than, you know, we maybe expected. And then, you know, Luz, I remember when Kat Smith went down, I was devastated because I was devastated for all of these injuries. But, you know, Catherine Smith was just such an important cog in that kind of defensive sort of midfield like role in the previous season. She's amazing. So, yeah. If someone had told me when she went down that we'd still make finals, I'd go, okay.
It's actually like looking at it now, going through that list alone and looking at the conference they were in, how well they actually played is actually really impressive given all of that.
Yeah.
It's still upsetting. But, yeah, like the fact, like players like Shelley Scott really stepped up and took it to another level. And anyone that follows me on Twitter knows that I just lost my mind about Shelley Scott every single week. Harriet Cordner coming out of defense and playing in the ruck for half a season, she really stood up. Like a lot of players played out of position to get the job done.
Yeah.
And it's really, really impressive. Kate Hall playing on the wing instead of as a pure forward, like things like that were huge.
Eden Zanka, you know, being in the ruck with Cordner.
Future captain.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
No, there was, look, I think, you know, as all these, you know, coaches say over the years that when, you know, players miss because of injury, it just gives opportunities to other players. And I think we definitely saw that.
Yeah. And then to at least still have the trio of, Maddie Gay as well, you could talk about that. She's been an incredible inclusion into the midfield that releases Daisy Pierce into defence. But Paxman, O'Day and Pierce, they're just three really strong, mature heads that can help you steady.
You know, Elise O'Day is someone who I think just flies under the radar.
Yeah.
But you can't underestimate, you can't understate how important she is in that midfield. She hasn't missed a game in four seasons of AFLW, and that's pretty extraordinary.
Yep.
I think it's funny that Jess Dalpos, you know, on GWS is also similar, and both of them Darabin Falcons. But, you know, Elise is just such a kind of a wise head. She never stops working. She's just the kind of solid footballer that I really, really love having on my team.
Yeah, repeat efforts, I think, are everything, and she epitomises that for sure because she's not a flashy player. Like, Paxman can come out and do something. You're just like, how did you do that? Whereas O'Day is more of, it's almost workmanlike, just repeat time after time, like getting in there. And I guess Shelley Scott is very much that kind of player as well, and I love that sort of thing. And, yeah, so it's a really beautifully balanced list, and that's why going into the season we're all like, yes, Melbourne is the team. Oh, so the season gets cut short after round six of eight. Melbourne is sitting third in Conference B. So if they were going to fast track to a final series, you're like, okay, Melbourne's safe, right? The first announced, and I vividly remember this night because I had a Pilates class at 8 p.m. and these announcements were coming out at like 10 to 8. So I'm like frantically on my phone. So the first announcement I saw from the AFL or from media relaying what the AFL had said was that only the top two would go through to an expedited final series. So Melbourne was going to miss again. So then I do an hour's Pilates class, just all mad that Melbourne is mid-finals again because it's fucking pandemic and everything is bad and I hate everything. And then I come out of the class. So an hour later, it's been updated and it's the top four of each. So Melbourne have finally made a final series after 4 years. And it's just like, what is happening?
I think there was, you know, it was frustrating that night because I think just the communication regarding AFLW was just unclear and it was kind of taking a bit of a backseat to the communication about the season one of the AFLM. Yeah. So that was frustrating, but we got there in the end.
Yeah, we got there again. So Melbourne was scheduled to come up against the Giants from Conference A, who had finished second for Conference A in front of no crowds up at Giants Stadium, the first ever AFLW match at Giants Stadium. So let's get to the game itself.
Yes.
Ball goes up and Jess Allen immediately shows that she is going to match Lauren Pierce all day. It was set Lauren Pierce's second game for the season because of that knee injury.
Mm.
And we all know and love Lauren Pierce, but she was a little bit underdone coming in. And Jess Allen, we know, is a highly athletic ruck. She's young, she can jump high, and she's also really good at ground level. So it was going to be a big challenge for Lauren Pierce. And for that reason, it felt like GWS were kind of immediately on top in the middle of the ground. So that immediately I was like, oh God, this is going to be bad. Because again, we're without our two best runners in Goldrick and McAvoy. You know, our defense has taken a huge hit with no Lampard or Kemp there. It's just like, oh, this is going to be bad. And then Jacinda Barclay was kind of epitomized what the Giants were doing by in the forward line, just her strong tackling and keeping it in there. Mm. Melbourne just couldn't get it out of defense, which is something they'd been doing very effectively until that point that year.
Yeah, I think this felt like this really felt like a final to me. You know, that the really contested, kind of nervy feelings. Yep. I feel like neither team really settled for the whole of the quarter. It was you know, and we've seen many games like this over the year with men's and over the years with men's and women's, that often it just takes a while to kind of get into the flow. But I think what's interesting is that we see both Cora Staunton and Alicia Eva both miss shots mm-hmm. on goal. And I think, you know, we talked earlier about our inaccuracy and GWS's inaccuracy in front of goal, and this really sets it up. This was kind of in the back of my head about, you know, lost opportunities. We had an opportunity. I think there was a kick in from Zanka into our forward 50, which Tegan Cunningham kind of had an opportunity. She needed the ball to sit right. She needed to be able to just, you know, pick it up in one movement. That was, and I feel like that was really our only opportunity in that first quarter. Have I missed one?
No, that was really kind of our only meaningful foray forward. And I think had it, and it did feel, even though they were nervy and missing those shots, the Giants did spend a lot more time in their forward 50 for this. And it was really only thanks to Libby Birch's intercept marking across halfback and Sarah Perkins' repeat efforts in the forward line. I think that kept us in it in that quarter.
Yeah, and I'd also say Daisy. I think, I mean, is this the right time to say how much I love watching Daisy Pierce play in defence?
Always the right time.
Like, I just, and I do have a real soft spot for defenders. I think, you know, it's easy to be flashy. I love just the work rate and how accountable you have to be as a defender. And I think Libby played, I'd love to see how many intercept marks she took for the season. Like, it'd be incredible. But just, she played like a goalkeeper role where she was just always in the hole. She was always in the right spot. And then we had, you know, Days kind of doing the same and just providing just great sort of kicking efficiency out of defence. And
every time she had the ball, it was like everything slowed down for a second. Mm. Get any of that intercept possession stat for Libby as well. So
I forgot I was speaking to the stat queen.
Oh, sorry. I've got it. Okay, I've only got it for the first four rounds, but she had 25 in four games, so averaged 6.25 across the first four rounds, which is insanity. Yeah. And it's actually a big up on her previous years.
Yeah.
Anyway, Daisy's like cool head, and you know that one of my favorite players, Harriet Cordner, another defender. So we can relate on that. And it's funny you say that, because when I did an episode with Emma, your sister, about Hawthorn's first women's flag, she spent a lot of time raving about another defender, Chantella Pereira.
Chantella.
So I love that this is a theme across the two of you. It's good. Every time she got the ball, it was like there was space all of a sudden and everyone could take a breath and position themselves better. And there was also a moment when you said it felt a lot like a final. There was a moment, two ex-teammates, Alicia Eva came in and bumped Karen Paxman a bit high, and Karen Paxman pushed her out of the way. And I'd never seen Paxi do that in the AFLW before, just like get genuinely angry on the field. And I was like, okay, yes, this is 100% a final, because they're mates, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Well, yeah. And also, Alicia Eva isn't someone that I ever expect to bump someone high either as well. Like, they're just, I really noticed that as well when I was rewatching the replay. I was like, oh, goodness me.
It was like just desperation football the quarter. Yeah. So the quarter ends with and I want to shout out Shelley Heath's agility in this game. She lays some really important tackles and puts some really important pressure on this game. She's a
I have a whole page about Shelley Heath. And I think, you know, probably great in this quarter, but third and fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah,
so huge. Maybe, yeah.
We'll
I'm a huge Shelley Heath fan. But, you know, there's an opportunity right at the end of the quarter for Privatelli to kick a goal. And I just want to say how much I loved watching Privatelli play. And I'm so rapt. You know, in this game we have her, you know, she who got Mark of the Year and Goal of the Year, Kate Hoare. And yes. I liked that.
I didn't even think about that. Kate Hoare's goal of the year was so
good. Yeah, it was good.
So we end the quarter with the Giants on 0-2-2 and Melbourne on 0-1-1. So very tight. A lot played between the arcs in particular. So we go into the second quarter and immediately it feels like the Giants are very conscious of Karen Paxman, because Karen Paxman did get a lot of the ball in the first quarter. But it was actually Lily Mithen who earned a high free kick, which I've seen called dubious somewhere, which I don't think it was that questionable.
Yes, I don't think it was either. But, you know, I might have my, you know, navy and red goggles on.
Maybe I do too. But, yeah, it's about 5 minutes in. It's in the pocket. It's not an easy kick. And she famously the week before against the Eagles, or 2 weeks before, sorry, against the Eagles, had a chance to kick her first goal in footy and missed. And this one, it was like, okay, more anticipation. Will she kick her first goal? She'd played 24 games. Like, is she going to get there? And she goes back and slots it and she celebrates. And it's just like, this is a great celebration, but it kind of foreshadows what's to come, doesn't it?
Absolutely. She does. I'd call her celebration an understated inwards double cobra. Just a little, you know, the little fist clench.
Yeah.
And it's just gorgeous. I've always thought whenever I see Lily Mithen, I think small but powerful. Like she's just, she just is like this little, packs a punch, this kid. Like she's amazing. I just love her. She's like a energizer bunny. She's a great, just incredible part of the team. She's one of those players you always want to have around. You know, she was devastated to injure herself in that practice game, and I think, you know, we were devastated to see it too. And I think you and I were saying to each other, no, she's fine. She's fine.
We thought she was fine.
Yeah, we thought she was fine. And I was, you know, lucky enough to see her at some of those early games where she didn't have a full match day role. So the thing that the Demons did, which was awesome, is that players like Shay Sloan and Kat Smith had, you know, some dedicated, like they had roles, jobs to do on the bench, and you know, really keeping them part of that team. But players like Lily, who they were hoping to get back, you know, she was just there, and she was always, I just remember, you know, her and Sarah Perkins just being so up and about and cheery and doing everything they can for their teammates. And so when you see Lily kick that goal and you just see what it meant to her, and the fact that Kate Hoare, her dear friend and housemate, was over there and they hug each other, like I get shivers talking about it now.
Yeah, well, I like that you mentioned Kate Hoare, because that also foreshadows what's to come too. But I kind of loved that, like, it would have been nice if there'd been a crowd for Lily to celebrate with after kicking her first goal. But the fact that there's no crowd, you hear all of her teammates just like joyously scream when the goal gets kicked. And it's like, it's not just because it's the first goal of the game, it's because they're all just stoked for her.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's so good.
But Melbourne do their typical thing where they just pepper at goals and kick one goal, five.
Yeah.
And then I
was just going to say, you know, the missed opportunities, you know, by Paxi, Zanka, and Scott, and I think Tegan misses one as well.
From the pocket, yeah.
From the pocket. And you can't, you know, when you think about this game and the fact that Paxi's anchor and at least, you know, those two are definitely in the best on ground for the whole game. Like, they're definitely in it. I think we're just, we're doing that thing of bombing inside 50. We're not thinking our way through, you know, good sort of forward 50 entries.
Yeah.
Which is probably also the GWS defence, you know. That,
yeah, Elle Bennett, who was in the All-Australian squad, she was incredible this year.
She had a great year.
And then Annalise Lister, who, again, out of the Darabin program, she in her first year was brilliant. And then you've got, you know, their midfielders that do push back really hard and do defend really hard. They don't, the Giants don't play lazy football. They
get into
every contest. And obviously Jacinda Barclay's tackling is destroying everything. But with 30 seconds left in the half, Melbourne had dominated this quarter. They'd controlled the ball. They'd kicked one goal four in this quarter. Mm. 30 seconds left. There's a one last foray forward for the Giants, and Amy Schmidt snaps a brilliant goal. It's a brilliant goal. She kicked their first goal of the season. And she kicks their first of the final, and it's 1 point in it. It's just like all of that for it to be 1 point in it at halftime. GWS 1-4-10 to Melbourne's 1-5-11. It's just like, God, there's so
It's so much- true. I mean, you know, even after that, because, you know, it's right in that last sort of 30 seconds to go from the centre bounce, there's this great mark by Zanka, who, you know, right on the siren but outside her range, she tries kick it into Shelley Scott but runs out of time. It's like they're doing all the right things, but there's just, it's not happening on the scoreboard.
Yeah, and it's, but that's, again, like added to the finals atmosphere of it too, doesn't it?
It really does.
I think, like, from my history of men's footy as well, the first premiership my team won in men's that I was alive for was that 2005 grand final, where it's low scoring, it's lots of stoppages, and this is the kind of footy that I've always loved. Mm. So I think that's maybe why I've latched on to women's footy so well as well, because it is a lot of that, which I think is great. I don't know what everyone else's problem is. So it's just like, but that constant tension, there's no relief to the tension. And Hannah Gadsby just like would love this, because it's just like, oh, just like give me a break for a second.
I think it's the intensity as well. The fact that it's, you know, shorter quarters, mm-hmm. which I think we're starting to see at the moment with the men's playing shorter quarters, that you just, you don't have that time, you know, that flat time in a quarter where people just kind of can lose concentration. I guess it's more a case of getting, you get punished for lapses in concentration and punished for not taking your opportunities.
Yeah.
And it just heightens everything.
Yes. Yes. That is, I think, a much better way to explain it than me just referencing Hannah Gadsby.
No, I liked that reference. I think that's good.
She's amazing. I watched the new one the other day. It was so good.
It's so, so funny. Good.
It was like 1 a.m. and I was watching it and I was laughing really loudly and I was like, neighbours will be mad at me. Let's go to the third quarter. So 2 minutes into the third quarter, Jestel Poz gets a high free, who gives it away for Melbourne? It's Lily Mithen. She's involved in so many key moments in this game.
Yeah.
And Del Poz goes back, and it's not an easy set shot. It's about 40 meters out, and she slots it. It's an incredible kick, and she absolutely gets the Giants up and about, and they have all the control. And there's a particular moment where you can just tell that they have the control is when Britt Tully, she's coming towards 50, and she just spots Privatelli up in this space in the forward line, just hits it on her chest. It's just like, how was the space? How was she able to get that kickoff? Like, it was just like the Giants have everything going right for them, but Privatelli wasn't able to slot it. It's like, oh, maybe there's hope.
Yeah. It's I found this quarter was almost like a mirror image of the second quarter, except so, you know, I think in the second quarter, we'd had something like five inside 50s to their none, and then it gets flipped on its head in this quarter. And, you know, we just can't get it anywhere. It's, I think, again, you know, where Schmidt plays on at one point and hits the post.
Yep.
There's this lovely spot where Tate Mackerel, and I love watching Tate Mackerel. Tate Mackerel. Sells the best candy in this
Daisy
quarter.
Pierce.
Oh, no, Daisy, she did earlier on. I think that was in the second quarter, but she does it again here. And kicks a point. And I just thought, she would, like, who sells candy to Daisy Pierce and gets away with it? And then she does it again. And unfortunately she kicks a point. So I think in the same way that we didn't make the most of our opportunities, they didn't. But we could talk about Shelley Heath here, because I think she was like the rare highlight for us. Mm-hmm. Just her run, she is so fast. And for someone who, I don't know if this is mean, but I always think of Anne of Green Gables when I see her, because she's, you know, got her braided plaits. She's little. She looks so young. But she is such a solid tackler, and yep. She brings pressure. And it's through, she brings pressure through work rate, because she gets to the contests and then she springs up and she gets to the next one. But just her run, I thought, in that third quarter was fantastic.
I love that reference, because I have a Shelley Heath badge on my Melbourne scarf, alongside my favourites, Shelley Scott and Harriet Cordner, of course. And I was at the Western Bulldogs match in round two with some of my Siren friends, and Kirby Fenwick, who, Western Bulldogs fan, will deal with that, whatever. She immediately said the same thing. She's like, oh, she looks like a Victorian era girl. So you're not the only one thinking that. Also, Tate Mackerel, what an angel. I did a really great interview with Tate a few weeks ago, so go to Siren and read that. That's my plug for this. Shelley Heath, I think when Bianca Jacobson was ruled out for the season, I was wondering where – I was trying to work out where we'd get that wing position from. And Bianca Jacobson is quite tall. She's good at intercept marking, and that's how they used her on the wing. But I kind of flagged, particularly after that Collingwood preseason game, that her run and pressure on the wing and endurance could be that replacement on the wing. She's not a like-for-like replacement with Jacobson, but she can do the job differently. And we saw her do that against Collingwood in preseason. And I think I yelled it at you like four times, look at Shelley Heath, look at Shelley Heath. So she came in and she 100% did that job. And then she just had to have her appendix out. So we really missed her in those games. And I think the Carlton one in particular, we missed her. So for her to come in and just get straight back into it was really exciting. She's only 19, 20. Yeah, she's super young. And everyone talks about Tyler Hanks from that draft, but Shelley Heath is just, and Tyler Hanks is incredible, but Shelley Heath is just as important to the team. I think that Hanks is.
I thought there was a great battle between Tyler Hanks and Lisa Steen.
Oh my God, yes, so good.
I loved, and I think I had a real soft spot for Lisa Steen because I was lucky enough to go and visit the GWS facility. Nicole Hayes from the podcast and I had been up in Sydney earlier this year, and we went out and visited the Giants, which was awesome. And they were telling us about, you know, they had a social media post going up that afternoon. And so I kept my eye on it, and it was Lisa Steen being surprised at school. She's a teacher to say that she was making, you know, she was going to run out this week, that weekend. And sometimes when you have little moments like that, it just gives you a little connection, I think, to that player. And Lisa is a speedy, speedy player. And her battle with Tyler, like, neither of them really got heaps of stats in this game, but they definitely kind of neutralized each other.
Yeah, 100%. Like, there was one passage of play where Steen had laid three important tackles one after the other. It was just like, and she, after that debut, she came in, she didn't miss a game after that. She was so important. And I think if she'd been 1 year younger, she would have gotten a Rising Star nomination, but she's 22, I think. So she wasn't eligible. It's just like, and I think a lot of people got her and Elle Bennett mixed up as well, because they're both playing that similar role out of the defensive line. But yeah, I'm glad you shouted out her, because she's been incredible. But with 11 seconds remaining, sorry, I got off topic a bit.
That's okay.
11 seconds remaining in the third quarter, Cora Staunton kicks a goal, and the Giants now hold the biggest lead of the game, which is 14 points. So going into the final quarter, it's GWS 3-7-25 to Melbourne's 1-5-11. Melbourne did not score in that quarter, and I was dejected. I'd given up hope at this point. I was being dramatic.
Well, I think it was, you know, if you think in the context of, you know, everything else, we were looking down the barrel of, you know, we didn't know what was happening with coronavirus, and there was, you know, people talking about lockdowns, and, you know, you can kind of try and get distracted by football, but then when your team's not kicking any goals or points in a quarter in a final, it all of a sudden gets a little bit serious. And, yeah. I remember feeling the same. I was like, you know, try to just keep your eye on the big picture here, Lucy. Bit of self-talk. But, you know, I can't be mad at Cora kicking a goal, because that's also a great comeback story, that she came back from what sounded like the most horrific broken leg. To be out there playing is actually extraordinary when you think that Tom Mitchell missed a whole season of men's football after, you know, a similar lower leg break. I am in awe of Cora Staunton.
And she's 37 as well. Like, that has a big impact as well. I know you're laughing because you're like, oh, I'm older than that, and it's
funny. Yeah, I'm way older than that.
in terms of like your body's ability to recover at the age of 37 as compared to Tom Mitchell's 25, like, that's a big, big deal.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Even like the trauma of that happening on a footy field and then wanting to step back out and do that thing that caused you so much pain. Like, yeah. I'm such a sook. I've done my knee and I refuse to play soccer ever again. Again, I'm being dramatic. Soccer is a dumb sport. No, it's not. It's not a dumb sport. I just don't like it because it injured me. It's the sport's fault, not mine. So... Melbourne have finally made their first final in 4 years, and they go into the final quarter with a 14-point deficit after they've only kicked 1.5 for the game. So it didn't feel great. And the Giants took control early in this game. But my first note for this quarter is that Shelley Heath's tackling, again, I think it kept us in it early and helped turn the tide for us. Yep. And I say us, I mean Melbourne.
Yeah. This is a truly biased and parochial episode.
Yes. That's the whole point of this podcast, I should say.
There's also a beautiful, and I don't know if this kind of happened around the same time, but there's a beautiful string of kicks that I noticed out of defence. So we've, you know, got the ball and it goes Paxi, kicks it to Daisy, kicks it to Kate Hoare, kicks it to Elise O'Day, and then she kicks to Newman, who is stopped by Tully. But it's just the most beautiful string of kicks. And it's also like, you know, just these names that are synonymous with Melbourne AFLW team. Yep. And I thought, there's something here.
Yeah, it's just like brings a little tear to the eye.
Yeah, yeah.
So with 10 minutes left of the game, Melbourne are down by 15 points. So they played about 6 minutes. Giants had scored one behind, but it was still very tight. But then woman of the moment, Shelley Scott, she takes a beautiful mark. It's 7.5 minutes left of the quarter, and she set shot from about 40 out, and she goals. And it was actually Lily Mithen that set up this shot, who kicked it into her. And when I say Lily Mithen was involved in a lot of key moments, I really mean Lily Mithen was involved in a lot of key moments. Yeah. So Melbourne are now down by 9 points. And I just want to run through what happens over the next 7 minutes or so, and then we'll talk about it. Cool?
Okay.
I want to make it dramatic.
Go.
So Melbourne's down by 9 points. Harriet Cordner laid a few really crucial tackles in this.
One on Cora. Yeah,
to keep it in the forward half for Melbourne, because she pushed right up, and her, Libby Birch and even Tyler Hanks created that barrier where they just couldn't get it past.
Yeah.
So the Giants were locking it down. They were creating repeat stoppages. But Sarah Perkins, who we flagged earlier that it's her repeat efforts that are huge, she wins a holding the ball free kick because she went up, tried to take the mark, wasn't able to hold on to it, but as soon as we got to ground level, she was tackling. And that was the big highlight of her game for Melbourne this year. She wins the free kick. It's about 40 metres out. It's a pretty significant angle. So I was just like, all right, it is what it is. And she goes back and she goals for Melbourne, and they're down by 3 points. And it's such a big, like, kind of moment, because Shelley Scott got them within the distance of it, but this Perkins kick made it feel real. They're down by 3 points. There's 3.5 minutes to go, and Sarah Perkins, their injury replacement player, who was delisted by a premiership club the year before, has kicked this crucial, crucial goal to win the momentum back for Melbourne. And then we get to 1 minute left. There's a stoppage at the top of Melbourne's forward 50. Lauren Pierce takes it out of the ruck. She handballs it to Kate Hoare, the roommate of Lily Mithen. Hoare kicks it beautifully, but Mithun is in a one-on-one against Annalise Lister, who is significantly taller than her. And let's be honest, most AFLW players are significantly taller than Lily Mithun. So it's this great one-on-one battle. Hoare kicks it, not necessarily to Mithun's advantage, but kicks it into the right spot. And Mithun marks it in a great contested mark. Almost exactly the same spot as where she goaled from in the first quarter to kick her first ever goal in AFLW footy. How were you feeling at this moment where she was going back to line up for this shot?
I can actually picture myself. I was sitting right on the edge of the couch and I'd kind of, when I feel like the game's kind of slipping away, I'm happy to lie back, have a, you know, rug over my knee, whatever. I was right at the end of the couch and I had screamed so loud I'd hurt my throat and I was just beside myself, like just pleading with everything that she'd be able to kick it.
I do the same. I can't sit back when I watch my teams play. Usually I'm standing up. I usually can't sit down, or I'm sitting like up towards. So I was standing at this point and I was watching with my brother and he was just like looking at me. I was standing up, very nervous. She goes back. She's only kicked one goal in her AFLW career to this point and it was in the second quarter from the same spot.
Yeah. I think the fact that it's from the same spot is really relevant.
Yeah, and it was similar spot to where Perkins kicked her goal from as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even Shelley Scott's. So it was all kind of coming from there. And it was the same spot as Dal Poz's goal for the Giants, because it was all the goal kicking was to that end of the stadium too. So she goes back. There's 30 seconds left and Lily Mithun kicks her second ever goal in AFLW footy and she does the famous celebration, which was kind of the previous one but gone up a notch.
And also with a hug by Kate Hoare.
Oh, so perfect. And I love that since then they did a little video from home where they were watching the game and then they recreated it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, I love them so much. So she kicks it and Melbourne is up by 3 points with 30 seconds left. And for the last 30 seconds, the ball lived between the arcs. Melbourne were able to shut it down for that 30 seconds. But it was just like the absolute desolation on the Giants' faces because they had the game won and it slipped, but they didn't do anything drastically wrong. It's not like in the men when Sydney came back from the 19 points down with 4.5 minutes to go in round 14, 2017, where it's just like they should have done this, they should have done this, and it's very clear. In this game, it was just like it was just luck almost. Like both teams played very, very well. It wasn't someone fucked up and it was like on one person. It was just, that's just what happened.
I think it just, you know, that kick into Lily Mithun from Kate Hoare, that was just a great mark. Yep. And it was just that Lily was in the right spot, the ball was in the right spot. You know, she, you know, basically had Lister kind of almost over the top of her, but she just still managed to grab it. And that's just, that's good football. You know, and that's one of those things that I don't know how you could have defended that, but you know, it is what it is. It's there was a lovely, I thought it was lovely that the ball was kind of in Shelley Heath's hands kind of right at the end, that you know, there's, you know, that 25 seconds on the clock and you know that still can be enough time, you know, for the game to slip away. And so that center bounce, that last center bounce, was still really, really important. And you see the ball you know, goes to Shelley and she's able to take a little bit of time off and she's, you know, clearly got, you know, some experienced players sort of telling her just, you know, settle it down. And I thought that was pretty awesome that, you know, she was there at the end as well.
Yeah, I can't speak highly enough of Shelley Heath, if anyone hasn't noticed that already. But it was just, it was such a consummate Lily Mithun game in a way, because not the goal kicking, obviously, because it was the first goal she'd kicked, but her involvement in absolutely everything. And that's what Lily Mithun has always been known for. And everyone talks about Pierce, O'Day and Paxman, and that's the trio at Melbourne. That's the trio at Melbourne. But Mithun has always been there supporting them on the outside and hasn't gotten a lot of that credit. So when she was missing, it was really obvious all of a sudden to people how important she was. So for her to come in and have such a huge impact all over the ground, it was just kind of really beautiful. And then So Melbourne have won their first ever final. And then what, a day later, we find out that the season's ended. So Melbourne fucking make finals. They win a final in a dramatic way. And then the season is cancelled.
You just couldn't script it, could you? You just couldn't script it. And I know, you know, you've mentioned Sarah Perkins, but I think, you know, if you say a game is kind of emblematic of somebody like Lily, this game is emblematic of someone like Sarah Perkins, that she just, what she can affect, she does affect. And you can't understate her, just the role that she played in those repeat stoppages.
Yep, 100%.
After she kicks that goal, she goes running to the bench and they tell her to go back on. She has to do a U-turn. And I was like, yeah, good idea, Mixtonia, keep her on. Because, you know, she just brings that pressure. She's just a really hard worker. And I just adore her and love having her as part of the Hawthorn VFLW team. And so, of course, I have a massive soft spot for her as well. But just to see her get her chance and to really play such an important role is, how great's that? It's almost like a fairy tale, really.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, the thing that makes this Melbourne win and this Melbourne season kind of different to the other successful teams. So, like, Fremantle had an incredible year and, yeah, they had some injuries, but, like, it kind of just was steady for them a lot of the year, whereas Carlton very similarly, Collingwood very similar, whereas Melbourne had all of this stuff go against them and then they've had all these stories come into it. So like Kate Hoare and Lily Mithen being housemates and knowing each other well enough that that kick could get to her, or Shelley getting her appendix out and coming back into the side and having a huge impact, or Daisy Pierce being the first one to have a year off to have babies and come back and have a big impact, or Sarah Perkins coming in and as an injury replacement player and playing a key role in the final three games for Melbourne. Like, all those stories coming in are just like, what are the chances of all these things coming together?
Yeah. And look, who knows what would have happened when we played Fremantle. So we would have played Fremantle the following week and we hadn't had a chance to play them.
We were meant to play them before the season had stopped.
Yeah. So who knows? And, you know, in some ways I know, you know, it's so frustrating that we weren't able to get a result. But again, I just kind of, you know, have been able to put it in the context of this very strange year that we're having. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I can take. There's a lot of joy I can take out of season four of AFLW and particularly, you know, watching Melbourne closely. So that it still fills my heart.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me wasn't the finals win. It was Shelley Scott winning the BNF, because I think she, and I actually wrote an article prior to the season starting, I thought she was one of the top 10 most underrated players in the competition. And for her to come in and win the BNF when Karen Paxman didn't miss a game, Daisy Pierce didn't miss a game, like there were other players that people would have assumed would have pipped her.
Yeah.
The fact that she was recognized, even though it was internally at the club and not like competition wide, that for me was like such a big moment, because she led the competition for marks on the lead. I think she was second for contested marks as well. Like, she was Melbourne's leading goal kicker in a year where Alicia Newman, who is normally right up there, didn't kick a goal. She kicked seven behind to the season. Like, in a year where King Cunningham, we've talked about, couldn't kind of get a game together. In a year where Melbourne was searching for someone to stand up in the forward half, she did it. And that was, for me, my biggest takeaway for Melbourne this year.
Yeah. And I'd add into that Kate Hoare, you know, that I think she came third in the BNF and just behind Paxi. And, you know, given that Tegan hadn't had a great year, I think she'd only kicked two goals for the season. Yeah. Whereas, you know, she, you know, kicked probably four times that in the previous year. Having someone like Kate just really step up and become such a dangerous forward was just, you know, great, and we couldn't have done it without her.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kate.
We could talk about every player like this, because even like the Irish girls coming in, they had a massive impact. And then Sarah Lampard, who came back off that knee injury and then re-injured it, but her game and her work until that point was incredible. Ainsley Kemp, another one.
Yeah.
You know, Harriet Cordner being thrown into the ruck and then back into defense, and Eden Zanker for ruck, and like everyone plays for the team, I think, is probably what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think so. Even, you know, Jackie Parry, who'd missed from injury, but, you know, she has that lovely role in Kate's goal of the year.
Yes. So, Jackie Parry, I can't wait to see a full season from her. And it feels kind of appropriate because I notoriously love Mitch Hannon for the men's Melbourne team, and they're both number 19. I'm just like, maybe I need to get a number 19 Melbourne Guernsey. I'm contemplating. We'll see. Yeah.
Well, 19's my favorite number. So
it's my favorite number too. Yeah. Oh. There we go. My birthday. How did you not
like me? Mine too.
Okay, we need to talk about this. Lucy and I are kindred spirits. You said that already. I think we definitely are. The more I talk to you, the more I'm like, yes, we relate so hard. Anyway, I think we should wrap this up because I'm just going to, you know, lament about football being AFLW being over, and we don't want to be sad.
No, we don't. Well, here, let me end on something that's really positive, and I know that you'll be across this because you are across all of this stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of talk about AFLW and, you know, there's, you know, the haters and there's some naysayers, and what I think we can be really happy about is to know that the AFL commission has come out and said, we strongly back this competition, that it's going ahead next year. There's no change to soft cap or, you know, salaries. You know, everything that was planned to be will be. Fingers crossed, just given what's happening with spikes in COVID numbers. But I was really, really happy when I saw the TV ratings and saw that the ratings for AFLW was up this year. And it was up by quite a significant amount, like 300,000.
Yeah.
It's enormous with men aged, what is it, in the 50 to 64 age group is like bizarre. But knowing, you know, from talking about football on Twitter and, you know, I know that there are a lot of, you know, it's not just women and girls who follow this competition. There's men and boys who are equally as inspired and love it. And significantly, the TV viewership of AFLW has increased while it's decreased for other parts of, you know, for the AFLM. So I just think, you know, it's nice to see that because our feeling when we were watching this season was this is great and it's really getting there. We've seen four new teams come in. Some have done better than others. I think St Kilda was just standout of the new teams coming in and play such an impressive brand of football. And, of course, you know, with Peter Searle in there, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. Yeah. But I think, you know, there's – while it ended on a sour note in having to stop and not, you know, continue through the finals, there's so much to love and to take out of season four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And even just like the rise of Maddie Prespakis and seeing those young players come in, Georgia Petrikios having an impact. Caitlin Greiser, like coming close to winning the Rising Star and like, yeah, there's so much good stuff. And
Izzy Huntington having a great year.
Oh, like number one draft pick from 3 years ago. Yeah. Who into defense and does it. Like, yeah, there's so many great stories. And I always talk about how there's a lot of people telling the stories. Not enough people are talking about what happens on the field. And I think this year we're starting to find the balance in how we cover it. Obviously, my coverage leads the way, being facetious.
It does.
But I think we are actually starting to find people looking more about what's happening on the field, not just the stories, because the stories matter, but what happens on the field also matters. And I think we're starting to get that.
I think so. And, you know, thanks to you and thanks to your Siren colleagues for what you've done. You guys are just absolute joy and love what you're doing, and it just fills my heart with so much happiness to see more women out there talking about sport, because this is what we do. We talk about sport. We love it.
Oh, that makes my heart swell so much. I don't know what to say after that.
Okay,
if people want to follow you, how can they find you online?
They can find me on Twitter at racy19.
19. I never even noticed that. How did I never
notice
that?
There it is. or by the Outer Sanctum podcast. So on all of our socials, and that's where I tend to talk.
The Outer Sanctum is amazing. Everyone, please go and listen to it. There's a recent episode from a week and a half ago, I want to say, called Open the Door. And that has been, and all the episodes are great, but that one hit me right in the chest. So please go and listen to that one specifically, but all of them. I am Gemma Bassiani. You can find me at GL Bassiani on Twitter or Play on Radio Melb, or support Siren. Sign up to our newsletter because it's all about women in sport. So not only women's sport, but women working behind the scenes in sport, which I think is equally as important. And I think that's all I need to say. I'll add things later if I need to in the edit. Thank you so much for joining me, Lucy. I really appreciate it. I'm so excited I got to talk to you today.
Oh, thanks, Gemma. I can't believe you asked me, but thank you so much. I, you know, really enjoyed it. And I've been missing standing in the outer with you, so this felt like a good replacement.
Yeah, I feel, like every time we are at the footy together, I just talk nonstop, not necessarily at anyone, but you're just so kind in actually responding to me.
I was going to make a joke about having three children, but no.
I
just like what you've got to say. I really do. I think you're one of the most important voices around football, men's and women's. And I think you're really, really smart in the way that you watch the game, the way you analyze the game. And if I could stand next to you at every single game that I watched, men's or women's, I would be much smarter about football. So that's the truth.
You're being so nice to me. What is happening? Someone hire me. That's what I should say. Someone hire me. Listen
absolutely
to Lucy and hire me.
Yeah.
Pay me and they pay should. Lucy. I'm going to stop blushing and wrap it up. This has been, I see it, but I don't believe it. That's been Lucy Race. Find her online because she's amazing. Listen to the Outer Sanctum. I've been Gemma Bassiani. Find me online if you want. I'm not pressuring you into that. Go and follow Lucy instead. And I'll be back soon with another episode. If you've got a topic you want to talk about, throw it at me and I'll happily talk to you about it because everything is online. So we'll just do it on a Google Hangout. Anyway, catch you soon.